But first, we're going to look at an issue that we may not want to spend a lot of time thinking about, but which everyone who's going to be voting in September will have to ponder, and that's assisted dying. The End of Life Choice Act is the subject of a referendum that's running alongside the general election, and it's already been a hotly debated issue as it made its way through Parliament. Well, journalist Carolise Trays has had a really long look at this in a brand new book called The Final Choice, and she's with me now. Kia ora, Carolise.
Hi. Hi, Colin.
Hi there. Well, yeah, I just would like to start with you. It's such a big topic. We've got so much to talk about, but I am intrigued. What was it that fired your interest in this topic? Because you've talked to an awful lot of people. The book is pretty comprehensive and would have taken an awful lot of time to put together.
Yeah, I think from the get-go, it has been a long personal journey, well, like a very thrust into a pretty deep issue. But for me, it actually started late last year. I attended a freelance job. I'm a freelance writer. And I went to this job and a meeting, and part of what was discussed at that meeting is the topic of assisted dying. And I came away thinking, oh my goodness, I know nothing. I know very little about this. And what I do know is that I'm going to have to vote in this binding referendum, make a really difficult choice. So what I did is I came away, did some research, and the further I got into the issue, the more I realized how and sort of intricate it is and how many levels there are to it. So I did my research, came away with questions, sat down with a friend one day and said, oh, this is crazy, what do I do? And they said, you know, that friend said, there's so many people that would find themselves in that same position. Have you thought about taking your journalistic experience and interviewing people and turning it into a book? And I thought, wow, what a good idea. And so, yeah, that's kind of how I got here. Really, the intention of the book is to help people get a wide sort of grasp on the issues that are at play here, to get some information. I think it's hard to find good information to make sure you get a good, you can make a good choice. So it's really to equip people to make good choices.
Okay. Well, the title of it is Assisted Dying the Answer, and billed as, you know, a hunt for the truth. I mean, did you find what you consider to be the truth, or yeah, is it indeed the answer?
Oh, man, that's a big question. That's the question of the entire book, I have to say. Difficult to answer that in a couple of minutes.
Having embarked on the whole process, yeah. Did you find out what you wanted to at the start?
Yeah, I answered a lot of the questions that I had at the start. I guess suffering is a really difficult topic. It's something that when we all come into this discussion, when we come to this decision, we bring our own personal experiences of what we've seen, how other people have died, and it's a really hard thing to look through. So I guess that question of the intention is to relieve suffering, and it's something that those on both sides of this argument actually want to do, and I appreciate that. But is this an appropriate method? That's the hard thing we have to look at. It's intended for a very few number, the extreme cases probably. There were some interesting facts that I did find through the process. Questions over here. Who is this for, and what is it seeking to relieve? I assumed when I came into this that we would be offering this, or people that would be using this would be in extreme pain. But one of the things I found out is internationally in the United States and some of the jurisdictions where this is legal, assisted suicide, the form of euthanasia or a form of assisted dying is legal. The motivational reasons for people using this, that one of the top reasons isn't actually pain. 90% of people over there use this because their life is not enjoyable anymore. And I thought, my goodness, is that what we're doing this for? Is that what we're relieving?
Well, that's one of the things that alarms the opponents of, you know, the act in this country, isn't it? But before I give people the wrong idea about your book, I mean, what I should say is it's not all just your interpretation of things, right? You've done a whole series of interviews with medical experts, legal experts, people with religious perspectives. So they all effectively get their own chapter in the form of yourself summarising their opinions and quoting them at length. And then also experts on what happens in other countries like the US or certain states there that you mentioned.
Yes.
In the end, when you balance it up, there are more people in your book that are kind of opposed to the bill or the act than in favour of it. Was that by design? Was that the balance you were looking for? Or was that just the way it fell once you approached all these people and decided to include them in the final book?
Yeah, that's a fair question. Like, you're right. I appreciate that you just describe the way that I introduce this topic and process it through the book. I have interviewed experts in the law. That was something that I realised early on. I need to hear from the people that know. There's so much misinformation and so much emotion out there, and fair enough. But yes, interviewed Dr. Sinead Donnelly, palliative care Professor Roderick McLeod, people from overseas, Professor Theo Boer from the Netherlands, people that are speaking on behalf of groups of people. So Richard McLeod, he's a lawyer that's speaking on behalf of Lawyers for Vulnerable New Zealanders. Yeah, there was a lot of people that have expert knowledge. How I chose the people for the book, I had to, you know, I've got a journalist background, so I've got 10 years I worked with Fairfax Media on the ground. I know that people carry incredible amounts of information. They're the interesting elements. And what I found is a lot of my contacts came from that Justice Select Committee submissions. So as this law was going through Parliament, it went through first, second reading, went to the Justice Select Committee. People from New Zealand, across New Zealand, could speak into their thoughts on this piece of law. And the reason why I've got a mix of both sides, but the reason why I've got more that have spoken against it is because I came with that simple argument, why shouldn't we be allowed this? And 90% of those that submitted to the Justice Select Committee said that we shouldn't be voting for this law. This law is not safe and it is not appropriate. It's not an appropriate solution to suffering. So I guess that is reflected somewhat in this book, but I wanted to understand both sides, and I wanted to give a platform, a space for people to fairly and accurately share their views. And I was quite direct with people when I interviewed them. I used that journalistic skill of seeking out that truth, really addressing issues, calling them up on misinformation and saying, hey, we need accuracy here. We don't need emotion. So yeah, that's kind of how I got there.
But did you, Carolise, approach it with any conviction of your own, either say on what we might call the moral question of whether assisted dying is right or wrong, or even, you know, whether the proposed law, the one that we will be voting on later in the year, is the right one?
Yeah, and that's, again, fair question. I came at this from a journalistic perspective. So when I entered into the conversation, I had a very, very basic understanding. I was probably within that between 58 and 74% that may have a view on one way or the other, but it was very simplistic. It was a sort of gut instinct. But, you know, as a journalist, we have to learn to put aside any personal bias and approach a topic that we're investigating you know, with least bias as possible, and that search for truth, really, to give people a platform to ask the tough questions and analyse what is being revealed to us. So that's the approach that I used and when I was interviewing and how I've written this book. I have thrown in personal stories. I have allowed people into that process that I went on. I'm a mum of two. I've got two young kids. It was fun. I'm glad I have children to be able to enter in these difficult conversations and then at the end of the day, close the door and your kids are right there saying, Mama, feed me. It's dinner. I want a bath. So it made it easy in some ways for me to change gears and not get too bogged down in the emotion and separate out that emotion from the analytical perspective that we need to try and keep. It's hard to do it, but we have to try and keep it when we're analysing a piece of law.
Sure. And you said early on in the book that one conclusion you did draw was that people, you think, aren't really deciding this on religious, or perhaps we could call it moral grounds, but on social grounds. What do you mean by that?
Sure. I guess I came into this whole topic with this assumption that everybody that would stand against this law would have a religious argument. And I think, you know, David Seymour, the MP that has introduced this Act, he at times has said that same thing. Mary Panker from the End of Life Choice Society has said, like, it's a very religious opposition. But what I discovered, and it surprised me, was actually there's those that are Christian and Catholic, there's Catholics and Christians on both sides of this debate. The majority of concerns that were brought into the Justice Select Committee, they were not religious at all. It was not sanctity of life based. It was really a societal concept. It's looking at it from a societal perspective rather than a religious perspective. And so I found actually, you know, when you've got a lawyer who is excellent, you've got a Queen's Council member, Grant Illingworth, willing to come out and say, hey, we're going to analyse this piece of law. It doesn't matter what religion that person comes from. We've got to listen to their actual expertise. So early on, I had to, just separate the religious argument out and start to look at this as a societal issue. And I think we all need to do that the best that we can. And again, those that I interviewed weren't one religious persuasion or the other. They were a variety. We've got a cross-section of religion going on here. But so it just didn't influence the discussion as much as I thought it would.
That chapter with Grant Illingworth QC is really interesting because he does break it down in that sense. So park a whole lot of arguments and actually look at the law as it's set out, which probably you're right, not a lot of people who will end up voting on it will know a whole lot about. But you mentioned David Seymour there, and of course he could not really be left out of any book like yours because he's the driving force behind the law. But his chapter is quite short, but it's very interesting. He is really cutting loose in some parts of it. You know, some quite interesting things he says. You mentioned misinformation. He says here, you know, people say there are death ambulances driving around the Netherlands picking up grandmas. It's bullshit. And getting fairly emotional about some of the things that are being said, and you can tell how important this is to him. But he also says, and you've pulled this quote out for the book, at some point you've got to be honest, this is David Seymour speaking, about the real motivation of the opposition to the act. You've got a group of people who believe God gives you life and it's God's choice to take it away. If a whole lot of people say no, that's bullshit, we're going to make a choice ourselves. That undermines everything those people believe and they just can't handle it. I mean, that's clearly a sincerely held belief, but it does summarise the problem, doesn't it? Anyone who feels there's a moral or a faith-based objection to it isn't going to be persuaded, probably by any of the arguments made by people who feel another way.
Possibly, but I don't think I can't speak on behalf of people and represent them in that capacity. But what I can say is that I did interview Dr. John Kleinsman from the Nathaniel Centre, which is a Catholic-based bioethicist centre that basically researches and looks at this type of topic. And what he said is actually, he was actually quite hard to pin down in terms of any reference, again, to sanctity of life-based argument, but he really came at it and he talked about, you know, the autonomy, the choice argument. If we come at this topic and say, I think this, I experienced this, what John was saying, that actually the Catholic perspective is that we need to come and approach these topics as we, and realising that we're actually a part of a community. We are, our choices impact others around us. We belong to each other in some respects. And that was an interesting perspective. So,
meaning that it shouldn't be an individual's choice because we are social and we belong to a society. Is that what he was getting at there?
I think not quite that extreme, but I think it was more we need to consider others in our decision-making process.
Yeah. Well, the other interesting thing was the international situation. Like, obviously, David Seymour annoyed by people getting what he believes is the wrong end of the stick about what happens in other places where they have confronted this issue. For example, there's, broadly speaking, an opponent of the Act, René Joubert, who says, we don't know how well it works in Europe, here in New Zealand. The truth is unclear to people looking at it from this distance. And then Mary Pankow, who you mentioned earlier, who points out terminal sedation is already used quietly, you know, in the background here in New Zealand. So is the issue one that is now, it's now a problem that we come to having to make our minds up whether to vote on a law. And yet some of these things we simply don't know. We don't know the reality of how these issues are already confronted legally and you know, practically, operationally in our health system.
It is very complex. Again, it's important to consider the international jurisdictions that have legalised this, because that's where we're going to get an understanding of potentially what the outworking looks like. So, yeah, it's a hard thing to approach. Again, in the book, I do address some of the key, at least with an interview with Jane Silloway-Smith. She's been researching this for nearly 10 years. She has given me a really broad understanding of the modifications, the different laws that are operating in the different jurisdictions. So again, excellent chapter to read to get some of that information. We do need to consider what's happening overseas. There's a lot going on. I think one of the things that David Seymour brings up is there's two things that stand out, and one of them is that no other law has been changed internationally. One of the arguments is from those that are opposed to this that, you know, we're going to see this happen and more people are going to use it, and there's going to be a slippery slope of law change. And David comes at that and says, you know what, it's not going to happen. It hasn't happened anywhere else. But again, we need information, good information. What I found, one of the professors from the Netherlands said, actually, that's not entirely accurate. Right now in the Canadian federal government, they are considering something called the Bill C-7. It's changing their law from being you must be terminal and, you know, going to die in the foreseeable future. They are changing the law right now as we speak, because the Quebec Supreme Court has ruled against that element, that eligibility criteria over there. So actually the law is being changed as we speak. So far out. It is difficult, but there is good information out there. There is good things we need to consider. I guess another big thing for me that I found really fascinating and that has impacted me is the reasons why are we introducing this law? We want to relieve suffering. We want those cases of people that are dying, that are in pain, that just want to leave. They just want to go. We want to relieve that. That's the target for this. But internationally, in Oregon, 2019 research shows that the motivational factor, the primary motivational factor, well, the most popular one, the reason for someone choosing this, 90% of people choosing this is saying that their life is no longer enjoyable. 59% are saying they're worried about being a burden on other people. And only 33% are actually in the pain, or they're afraid of the pain. So I guess it brought me back to that place of, hold on, why are we doing this? Is this safe? Is this good? Is this going to solve the problem that we're all hoping it will? And is it?
Well, with that in mind, Carolise, I'll put you on the spot finally and ask, what do you think is going to happen in September? Which way will New Zealanders go?
I don't know. I know that right now as we sit, but somewhere between 58 and 74% of Kiwis sit very, very sort of to the side of voting for it. But what I've also seen is that that same portion of people don't know much about this. Again, a few stats, 74% of people think that this assisted dying law will mean they can turn off life support. That's already legal. We need to get equipped and educated. We need to search out the truth. I guess my book is a motivation. Come on, guys, we've got to find some information and make a really informed decision. This is a big decision. This is life and death. And so I just say again and again, please read the book, get good information, do your research, look past that simple information we've been presented and really dig in. It's a huge decision for people. It's life and death for people. So it's worthy of that time and commitment.
We've got 3 months to get our act together and we'll cast an informed vote on that. Carolise Traes, the author of The Final Choice, End of Life Suffering, Is Assisted Dying the Answer? That's her new book, which is out now.